Should the police prioritise the most serious crimes at the expense of other offences? Well, the top lawyer, Nick Freeman, famously known as Mr. Loophole, says it's a scandalous waste of taxpayers' money when the police and prosecutors go after what he's called the soft option motoring offences. He made the claim after a Cheshire motorist, who he did not represent, was ordered to pay more than £10,000 prosecution costs after being found guilty of driving his Audi A8 car at 101 miles per hour on the A55. Nick told me about the case and his concerns.
This company hired an R8, which is an Audi R8. They hired an airfield to try and disprove the defendant's assertion that he wasn't speeding. Now, the speed was measured by a speeding device, and the prosecution should have been able to simply to present the device, the officer who conducted the test, and that should satisfy the court that everything was hunky-dory. And in my view, it's completely unnecessary to go to those extraordinary lengths for a simple speeding case. The costs incurred in this case are the equivalent of a one-week Crown Court trial. And it appears to me that there is nobody who is accountable. And there's an open checkbook for people who are accused of speeding. And this was simply a case. There was no accident, fortunately, no victims.
So they hired
travelling too quickly.
They hired an airfield, Nick.
They hired an airfield, and they hired an Audi R8 to try to illustrate that their speeding device was working correctly. Well, in my view, it's completely farcical. This is taxpayers' money we're talking about, and serious offences should be prioritised. I'm not in any way condoning speeding. But this is clearly disproportionate, and I just wonder who is accountable. Is there an open checkbook for speeding motorists, or in fact is somebody running amok with the whole system?
And yet, Nick, some people will accuse you of hypocrisy, won't they? Because they will say that very wealthy clients use a lot of money to employ people like you to find loopholes. So why shouldn't the police and the prosecutors use a lot of money to try to prosecute people?
This isn't a case of... People are entitled to choose who they want to defend them, and the fees that lawyers charge is a matter for them and their client. And I'm not suggesting that they don't have decent Crown prosecution lawyers. There are many decent Crown prosecution lawyers. At the end of the day, if the lawyer's done his job properly and the police officer's done his job properly, it's unnecessary to go to the lengths of hiring an airfield and a 110-mile-an-hour, £110,000 sports car to try and prove a case. They've already got the evidence of the officer and the speeding device. Now, if he's done it properly, the magistrates accept that. If they feel there's some doubt about it, they'll acquit. It's as simple as that.
What doubt can there ever be?
Well, the officer may not have held the device steady. He might have picked up the wrong target. This of course, wasn't my case.
How do you prove, though?
But I mean,
it's interesting. It's really interesting, Nick. How can you prove an officer didn't hold a device steady?
Well, it's a matter of evidence. He might say it was in fact on a tripod. He might say I was holding it in my hands, but it was steady, and there was no slip factor. He would illustrate what the device would show, and if the device was shaking, there would be a slip factor, and he would give evidence about that. He would say I would abandon the check. And I would start again.
But what
so it's a case of whether the magistrates accept his evidence.
Sure. What I'm trying to ask you, though, as a lawyer that often defends people, I understand how an officer can say, of course, it's steady. How can you prove it wasn't? In any case, how can you prove...
You can never... The defence have to raise a doubt, and if they raise a doubt at an evidential level that the magistrates are happy with or the judge is happy with, then that causes the Crown a problem. But because... the defence make an assertion. I mean, look, let me give you an illustration, a case that came in yesterday. A young man in a much smaller car was allegedly travelling at over 100 miles an hour. The car, in fact, only does 88 miles an hour. Now, you know, clearly the police have got it wrong. Now, how do I prove he wasn't travelling 100? I'll produce the road reports from the particular manufacturer who will say this maximum speed of this car, excuse me, is 88 miles an hour. So that's a simple illustration for you. Sometimes you're not fortunate enough to have that sort of cogent evidence, and it's a case of establishing for the court who they believe. Do they accept the Crown, or do they feel actually we're not sure that the Crown, the officer, is telling the truth, we're not sure he's actually conducted this test properly, and if that is the case, then of course there's a presumption of innocence and the benefit of the doubt is afforded to the defendant.
Aren't courts always minded to believe a police officer, though?
There's no golden rule. I mean, that's a massive misconception. It all depends on the officers. Some officers are truthful and some unfortunately aren't. And it's glaringly obvious when an officer is not being fully candid with the court because they're not clever enough to get away with
it. I'm not asking you to give all your secrets away.
Not going to, Steve.
I know you're not. I know you're not. I've spoken to you many times over the years, Nick. But give us another couple, because it's fascinating stuff. Another couple of examples of how some of your clients have been acquitted.
In this particular case that we're talking about, there was a question mark over whether the officers had actually got the right car. And sometimes, I mean, I can give you an illustration to support that. I was defending a gentleman in an Audi on the toll road. It was a very fast type of Audi. And the officers gave evidence that he accelerated very quickly from the toll. They weren't able to get the number of the car. And they caught up with the car several miles later. And they put two and two together and said this was the same car. And when they were asked by myself whether it was possible that there was another car of a similar nature on the road, of a similar colour, they had to concede, yes, it was possible. It was extremely unlikely. But at the time that they saw the car, they didn't get the registered number. They'd lost sight of the car momentarily. And, of course, they weren't therefore able to fill in all the links of the chain so that the court could be satisfied so that they were sure it was one and the same car. You may have situations where the courts are not satisfied that the device is working properly.
Aren't all of those devices always working properly?
Not all the time, no. Not all the time.
Really?
You can point a device against a static wall and it can give you a reading of 44 miles an hour. These are not straightforward things.
Because the majority of us presume that once you're done by the police, you know, by a speed camera, that you have to accept it because it's their equipment and it has to be working well.
One would like to think so, but statistics, certainly the clients that defence lawyers represent, including myself, ensure that there are many people acquitted.
So how does the equipment fail, Nick?
You can't be sure that the prosecution have presented the case properly. Or sometimes what happens is, in this day and age, there are many administrative hearings and the prosecution and the defence are ordered to comply with the directions of the court, which might be, for example, to serve documentation. The Crown might be ordered to serve documentation by a certain date. And unfortunately for the Crown, they often don't comply with those directions. And many, many times now, cases are dismissed before the trial date. It happens far more than it used to because of these directions that are given, that the courts, the prosecution, don't comply with them, and the case never actually reaches trial. So we don't know, actually, we never test the evidence. We don't get that far.
How can the speed gun equipment fail, Nick? How can it be dodgy? Well, how have you proven that in the past?
Well, it needs to be checked before every tour of duty. It needs to be checked. It needs to be checked over a measured distance. Now, sometimes you have a situation where the officer might not have checked it. It needs to be checked at the end of the tour of duty. It needs to be calibrated. So if all these things are done, and if there is evidence there, admissible evidence to show that these things have done, and also you've got an officer who convinces the court that he's not only conducted the checks, but he's conducted the speed check correctly, then the defence have got difficulties. But unfortunately, more often than not, there'll be a piece of that jigsaw that's missing, and that will enable a defendant to be acquitted.
Really interesting talking to you, Nick, as it always is. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Listening to that, the commentators Emma Wolfe and Geoffrey Peel. Morning, Emma.
Good morning.
What do you think of that?
Well, look, I think it's tempting to dismiss these sort of minor offences or driving offences or whatever, but the fact is all crime matters. And, you know, if the police don't really go after dangerous driving or minor driving offences, they become acceptable and then people buy. There's a really interesting theory called broken windows theory of policing. It's from the 1980s. And research has proved that when you sort of ignore or overlook lower levels of crime, softer crimes, just local disorder, that leads to increased fear and disengagement, and that allows more serious crime to move in. So I think we absolutely need law enforcement, you know, really rigorous law enforcement at every level, zero tolerance for every single crime. And of course there's going to be lawyers like Mr. Loophole who are going to disprove it, but the police, as their first principle, have to have that rule that any crime is crime.
Geoffrey Peel?
Yeah, but sometimes you get the feeling that these are not crimes at all. They feel more like scams. You know, it's almost impossible for people who use the roads these days to understand what the relevant speed limit is and to comply with the law. You know, you use your best endeavours to comply with the law. I recently had an instance where I was travelling to the airport in order to take a flight to Switzerland, and I was done by a speed camera on the way to the airport. When I got to Switzerland, I rented a car, and when I came back from the trip, I got two speeding tickets from Switzerland. So in total, the three speeding tickets over the course of a week cost me some £250. And you get the feeling, and I wasn't aware that at any point I was speeding. So you get the feeling sometimes that the authorities are almost like scam merchants, that this is simply a money-making racket, and
yeah,
that
and
you have no ability to control, mount an appropriate defence. The easiest option is to pay the fine and feel the pain. But, of course, in the process, no one has been injured.
If you're breaking the law, then you deserve to pay the fine.
And I have every sympathy because I have been cycling through London late at night with empty roads, and I've been done more than once for going through red lights. And what the police do is they trail you, and then I have actually been fined like £90, which is three times the £30 fine, for them trailing me for a few minutes to check. And that is, okay, I'm breaking the law. But you do feel that...
But you were in the wrong.
Yeah, I know, but I wasn't harming anyone. There was no one at risk and there was no one on the road.
Yeah.
And also I would have thought that they would fine me once rather than three times.
And how many real criminals were they not chasing when they were doing you for cycling through a red light?
And that's what I've said to them, and I've got in trouble, but I've said, aren't there any terrorists to go and catch? Don't you have more serious things? But actually, we do need to prosecute these crimes, because when we accept low levels of crime breaking or illegality, I guess it escalates and then it becomes more serious, so that the police have to fix all of these problems when they're small.
But it really does depend on how we define crime here, because you do get the feeling that this is a scourge on perfectly law-abiding people. You know, for example, the it is clear that the traffic authorities deliberately put in place a speed traps. In other words, they'll go from the standard speed limit to a lower speed limit over a specific point on a dual carriageway, for example. Maybe using the excuse that there are zero visibility roadworks, and it sometimes feels as though those speed traps are deliberately designed to maximise revenue. It's not really about criminal activity or mitigating criminal activity. It is actually about revenue generation, and that therefore we're in the domain where the general public perceives law enforcers as scam merchants, and that is not a good development.
And you can pick up,
not good for democracy.
You can pick up the phone this morning and let us know what you think. 08459 555 678. Nice to talk to you, Emma. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, Jeffrey.
Morning, Stephen.